Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Tour Catch-Up,
Collins claims Charleston for 2 titles in 2 weeks.
Berrettini wins his first trophy since 2022.
And Saudi Arabia secures the WTA finals for the next 3 seasons.
Kim, Chris, today is the 8th of April and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. Move over hard courts, the clay swing has arrived, and what a week we've had with Danielle Collins claiming successive titles, Matteo Berrettini marking his injury return with a title in Marrakesh, and Saudi Arabia securing the end of season WTA finals. Lots and lots to look forward to. And Chris, you are back. You are back from Estoril. And judging from the Tennis Weekly socials, you had a lovely time.
It was a lovely time, but it wasn't all pastries, pastel de natas and port wine. You know, we did do some tennis journalism whilst we were there. We got some very nice kind of time with the players, which was great, as well as having a bit of fun, because you have to when you're out there in the sun.
Yeah, me and Joel were quite envious of your time in Estoril, but very grateful that you and Alina were able to go. And we will be, yeah, listening to you both back from Estoril.
I was envious. I was envious by the end, because at the start, you had lots of rain and I was like, ooh, yeah. I was a bit nervous.
Well, we've been talking about, do 1,000s need roofs, and maybe 250s
everyone
need roofs as well.
Every event needs a roof nowadays.
It does. It was biblical when I said that, in terms of the water that you saw kind of rushing down the streets of Lisbon, and a whole day was rained off before the sun arrived. And then actually, I've got to be honest, I did get a little bit of a sunburn just where my lanyard was. So I just had this stripe on the back of my neck. So I was very much surprised by the turn of the weather, you can say.
Joel, you'll have to make sure for the Croydon Open, we find a venue that's
indoor,
perhaps.
Yes. And maybe a sun cream provider.
Yes, I've just been spending the last 3 hours farting around on buses in South London because there's a train strike today. So I've just had the pleasure of coming home from work on many buses in the rain through Croydon. So perhaps, you know, compare that to your week in the sun, Chris.
That doesn't sound as appealing, but I mean, no. Joel does love a bus on the way home. How would you rate your experience, Kim?
2 out of 10. It was very slow.
Take the train.
There's lots of traffic.
Well, Kim, how did it compare to last night? Because I believe, even though it was a school night the next day, you were out partying for Eurovision.
It was the London Eurovision party. And many long-time listeners will know that I'm a big fan of Eurovision as well as tennis. And we're entering full-on Eurovision season now. There's preview parties, everyone's speculating, predicting who's going to win Eurovision. But it's also the start of, you know, the clay court season, which is probably my favourite time of the tennis calendar.
Obvious reasons,
historic reasons, you know, Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Rome, like places where Rafa's, you know, excelled very much in the past.
I'm thinking about this, Kim.
It's a nice season for both.
What about, Kim, if we do a Kim's game and it's clay court and Eurovision trivia?
Ooh, I feel like I'm not gonna be able to rise to the
You're
occasion.
You're a grass court individual. Okay.
Eurovision
Unless
is
it's blue clay.
Eurovision is tricky. It's tricky. But apparently, what, Italy? Italy are favourites. Is that right?
I think you'd know more than you realise. Italy are one of the favourites. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be a parallel. Maybe Italy will win Eurovision and Yannick Sinner will win Roland Garros and sweep up the clay court season.
Connected, are they?
Well, they are.
Is that like the new? Is there like a sunshine double there? Is it like the Roland Garros Eurovision double? That's not very.
Maybe he's going to sing.
Very catchy, is it?
And Italy will win the Euros in the football. Maybe.
Oh, a hat trick.
It's happened before.
Okay.
Yeah, a hat trick.
It's an Italian summer.
Sporting and musical victories. But yeah, that has happened before. But yeah, lots happening at the moment. It's a great time of the year. And, well, lots happening in tennis over the last week. Not just Chris's escapades in Estoril, which we'll get onto in a second, but some fun moments as well from the tour. My particular favourite sort of highlight from the last week, I mean, I have quite a few, but I did love, and this is a reference that came up a few weeks ago in the podcast, I did love Danielle Collins's reference to Ellie Goulding in her speech at Charleston when she won the title. She said that 8 years ago she was watching Ellie Goulding perform here in this stadium.
Wow.
And so she's blessed to have had the opportunity to live out her dream. So she must be a big Ellie Goulding fan, like Roger Federer.
Everyone seems to be.
Ellie Goulding was big enough to sell out the Charleston Open Stadium.
No, but was she singing at the tennis?
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah.
They're quite similar in age, those two. So it can't be like a childhood icon of hers. So
if she was singing at the tennis, then she's obviously got a history of performing at tennis events.
Her agent, just, you know.
I thought it was like, was it not her American tour? Oh, I don't know.
No, it probably was. It probably was. But yeah, so she said she is a big deal. A lot of players seem to be fans.
8 years is quite a long time to make that dream happen, because she was playing there every year already. Danielle Collins was filling out stadiums in Charleston. But now the people came to see her, I guess, rather than just the day of tennis.
We'll get on to how she won the title, spoiler alert, in Charleston later on. But Joel, what's been floating your boat on the tour in the last week?
Well, my favourite moment was actually in Estoril, and it was at the final, and particularly the post-match ceremony, where Hubert Hurkacz won, and I was sort of expecting, as usual on the tour, some giant novelty check coming out to be handed to him by the main sponsor. Did this happen in Estoril? No, it didn't. We caught the only way I can describe it is it's the sort of machine you get in McDonald's when you go through...
large contactless.
Yeah, like a machine that you do kind of self-service at before you go to the counter. And they wheeled out one of these kind of machines onto the court, and they showed... They showed Hubert Hurkacz the bank transfer happening of €88,000, basically using one of these machines. And I don't know. I was looking at it thinking maybe they thought this was quite cool and innovative, but I'm looking at it and thinking this is how I order McDonald's on a Friday night.
Yeah, and I think it kind of missed a bit, because obviously a big check, everyone knows what it is. Whereas if you're in the stadium, you have no idea what's happening right here. And they're obviously announcing that it's going on.
Maybe Hubert Hurkacz is ordering his McDonald's.
Well, I mean, if I was him, I'd be checking my account to be like, has it gone? I mean, you might have sent it, but have I received
also on
it
a
is
Sunday,
a big question.
The final's on a Sunday. Banks don't work on a Sunday.
Especially in Portugal. I arrived on Easter Sunday. Nothing was working. And the following Sunday, nothing was working as well. So very unlikely that €88,120 made it to his account. Thankfully, his account details were actually blurred out, so no one is able to kind of steal his identity.
Keep the novelty checks. Tournament organizers, don't look at this and think, "Oh, we need to latch onto this trend." Keep the novelty checks coming.
I wonder what they do with the novelty checks after presenting them to the players. Do they take them back and then wipe out the name and replace it for the next year? Like, could they have them on a whiteboard so it could be kind of reused?
Don't they just
year?
Kind of take them to the bank?
Take it to the bank with your
the big check? No, they're not real checks, are they? They're just sort of showpieces.
What do they do at Children in Need then, where they bring out the big check? They must be able to take that away and cash it.
I thought they would give them a real small check
in
addition.
Novelty checks real? I think they are, but maybe they're not.
You don't get a novelty check book though, do you?
That's why they've come up with this innovative McDonald's style solution in Estoril. But Chris, was there something else that you particularly enjoyed from Estoril, I believe, in the last week, in addition to many other experiences? Of course
it had to be in Estoril, didn't it? I couldn't let Joel have the Estoril moment from our highlights of the week. It has to be Casper Ruud, and you might have seen this from our socials, where he decided he was kind of quite annoyed by a certain drone. It was very, very high up. I don't really think it was about the drone at all. And then he decided the way to kind of counteract this when the drone was not moving was to try and hit it out of the sky with a tennis ball. And the thing that I enjoyed most about this was the crowd absolutely loved it, very much on his side. But also the ball boy was passing Casper balls to hit at the drone as though he was preparing to serve. So it was almost like a very official process. And maybe the ball boy was kind of involved in this. But he didn't hit the drone. He got quite close on the second one. But that was probably to do with the fact he wasn't playing very well. But very entertaining. And do look at that on our socials.
We definitely weren't trying to make content from unique angles in the sky, were we?
That was not me on the drone. I can check with Alina. It could have
been
her.
Was it
Alina?
It was not our drone.
She's definitely more high tech than I am.
How are the towels in Estoril? Did they look nice? Do you think Casper was pleased with them?
This was the saddest thing about it. It was only the winner that did press. And my question was going to be, who is your public enemy number one? Is it the Estoril drone or is it the Miami changing facilities?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, I was going to say Miami towels, but I thought maybe he quite likes the towels. He wants the towels to be there. But didn't get the chance. I need him to win the match, which unfortunately he didn't. Next time.
Excellent. I could see him perhaps creating his own brand of towels, like some kind of Scandinavian concept design.
I would love
anyway,
that. You know,
that's a different train
sort
of thought
the,
there.
Not the arrogance, but the, you know, I don't like the towel facilities at this
BYO
tournament,
towel.
So I'm going to bring my own branded towels.
Honestly, they've got Bjorn Borg pants. Why not Casper towels?
Tennis Weekly towels.
Casper towels, yeah.
Tennis Ooh. Weekly player
Tennis
towel.
Weekly towels, yeah. For when you're sweating in your room, Joel,
yeah,
recording.
In the summer.
Well, we have had lots going on at Estoril, and we do have Chris and Alina to give us some highlights of their time. So let's have a little listen to them now.
Alina, hola from Estoril. We're sitting in a cafe in sunny, sunny Portugal. It wasn't sunny at the start. It is sunny now, and things are looking up because we've had many pastries, and we're probably about to have another one.
Many delicious snacks, Chris. Honestly, this was a pastel paradise.
It really was. We did say that the next time you speak to us, we probably would be courtside having a pastel de nata. And to our followers, you would have seen that did happen. We brought them to the event. In fact, we brought a box of six to the event. And then I think the whole of the Tennis Weekly channels became essentially a Portuguese pastry channel. So we've been working our way through them. I think you had a preference?
Yes, it's called, actually it's a croissant brioche.
Oh.
That makes it a bit different from what you might expect from a croissant.
Yes.
Like flaky Paris croissants. Well, the Portuguese one is made out of brioche dough, and they just make the most extraordinary fillings.
Yeah, a filled croissant. So
a filled croissant. The custard had me. It was absolutely amazing.
It was absolutely delicious. We had many things to cover. We had to find out about the Portuguese language, which we haven't done that well at. I had to practice saying hola four times to make sure I was saying it right. Did I say it right that time?
The accent is still missing.
The accent is missing. It will always be missing. So that one we haven't done necessarily that well on, but we do have some scoop on as to whether Estoril is cancelled or not. We found what drink Kim would be sipping if she returns to the Estoril Open, if it does return. And we also spoke to Dominic Thiem about his wrist and the update from that video. So we actually covered quite a lot of ground here, Alina.
Yeah, we were busy.
Very busy. Firstly, we should touch upon, is Estoril happening next year? We spoke to tennis journalist and commentator, and you'll see some of this on our social channels, Jose Morgado, who is Portuguese, and we got some inside scoop. Essentially, next year is not as long. It's 1 week less.
We are missing a week from the ATP calendar.
It's not that deep.
No, and we didn't know.
We did not know. And also, we found out that this tournament is on a lease, and it was on a one-year basis.
Yeah, which made it quite difficult to renew it for the next year. So when the ATP reviewed the calendar, apparently this was the bottom and the ones to start with, the temporary leases.
So it's nothing personal. So they don't actually own the license.
Exactly.
They lease it, exactly. So that's quite a surprise because it has been such a big fixture on the tour. So we hope it will come back. The talk is still very much, there is a hope to find a spot. But when you look at it being 1 week less, are you optimistic, Lina?
For next year? Maybe not. But let's hope that 2026 is going to bring it back. Definitely. The players really love it there and we loved it.
On the subject of loving it, you are the queen of the 250 in a way that Casper used to be the king of the 250. You've been to three in the last, 9 months?
Yeah.
You've had many different experiences, but what do you think sets apart the Estoril Open and makes it so special?
I think just having a tour on the Riviera, but exposed so much to like the beach and the old towns, but also keeping it like fairly small.
It just takes over.
You start a morning with a nice walk by the beach, then you go to the tennis, and in the evening, the tennis tournament continues on the streets of Qashqai.
We didn't get the bus. We actually got a taxi, we have to confess. But the bus goes from Estoril to Qashqai, and then it's almost the whole restaurant quarter is covered, littered in wonderful bunting, tennis balls, and they're all official partners.
And posters of Casper Ruud.
Casper's everywhere. João Sousa is also everywhere. And when we were there, we'd get us onto the drink of choice. We actually sampled, in the wonderful Qashqai streets, an amaretto sour, which we thought was delicious, but not necessarily one for Kim. The drink of the tournament that we enjoyed was a Graham cocktail, which was with a white sort of port wine. Is that correct?
Yeah. They made a special blend, a special mix for cocktails. We had one of those.
Quite Hugo-esque, would you say? Would you think it would take Kim's fancy?
It gave Hugo.
It gave Hugo. It did, didn't it? And we enjoyed one of those whilst watching Casper practice.
We were so lucky.
No one was there except us.
Nobody expected it, and I don't think they announced. Here we were just surprised.
we happened
got
to see
drink,
him,
so
yeah.
Like, is that Casper practicing just for us? Apparently he was.
Yeah.
And he was happy to see us.
He was happy to see us, and then I think he saw us in press afterwards and thought, they really are paying a lot of attention, these two journalists. So
would he be wrong?
No, he would not be wrong. But in terms of the other thing that we had to make sure that we reported back on was Dominic Thiem and the wrist and that very high production video that we talked about in our preview for the tournament. And we did ask him the question.
Yep, he did not feel the pain in Estoril. So I think there was a scare. But at the end of the day, everybody's talking about his wrist injury being more psychological than physical. We got some inside scoop from Jose as well, from his physio.
Indeed, he said that it probably had been okay for a while. Again, obviously, we're not kind of saying that it's not a real injury. Of course it is, and it has been. But it does feel like when he said that the wrist was relatively pain-free playing here, despite kind of the earlier loss than last year, and we can hear from him now. Dominic, that's obviously a very close match. It could have gone either way that second set, especially. You opened up online recently about having some pain back in your wrist and kind of scaling back training. How was kind of the first week of competing since you announced that news gone?
Yeah, it was okay. You know, I had a solid match on Monday. I had another solid match today. Mm-hmm. It was not bad at all. Mm-hmm. As you said, it could have gone either way, especially second set. And yeah, the wrist is it's okay. It's under control, but it's not good, and it's not like it was before. But yeah, I'm I know this, you know, and so I can deal with it. But no, it was two solid matches. One went my way, one unfortunately the other way. Yeah, so that's how I leave Estoril.
He has unfortunately lost in the opening round of qualifying in Monte Carlo, which is a big shame. He went straight there. I thought there were flashes of brilliance, but that was definitely, when we move on to the tennis now, that was definitely a highlight, seeing Dominic Thiem so close. And I mean, you were on court capturing all of the fantastic content for that one. And what was it like watching Dominic Thiem's backhand up close?
I was on the same court with Dominic recording
the same clay. Yes.
Same clay. The last time I saw him, I think live, was him at
the French?
French Open 2019 taking the match from Djokovic. Yeah,
a bit different on court two,
but still
at the Estoril Open, but still just as exciting.
It was super exciting to see that.
I do always worry when you get on court that you might just grab a racket and start playing, because I know that it really does fire you up as a tennis player yourself.
Or hand them a bottle of water if they need it.
Yes, this was actually something we had to tell you about. We were watching, who were we watching at the time? It was Martinez playing against Casper, and that was a match that we'll cover after we tell you this story. And Alina was not only in the photography pit, she was also courtside and doing what?
I was actually hiding from cameras behind the umpire chairs. Yeah, I'm camera shy. Nobody
Good job,
was...
this is an audio-based platform.
Nobody was. There was nobody to attend to the players. Pedro Martinez just turned around and asked me for a bottle of water in Spanish as the water cooler was
thank goodness it was you
away.
He asked, I wouldn't know what he was saying.
So I actually helped him out with a bottle of water, and he thanked me politely, and that was an experience. I probably should be on the Estoril Open payroll by now.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely worked every aspect of the event, on the clay, on the dirt. But in terms of the results that we saw, he did actually upset Casper Ruud last night, Martinez, which was quite a surprise, given the fact that when we spoke to Casper throughout the tournament, he was talking about how much more aggressive he was, and we can hear from him now. On serve today, you won 100% of points on your first serve in the first set, and 82 for the match. There's been a lot of talk about you playing more aggressively, but are you also trying to be more aggressive on serve as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think I said it on court, but my serve is not my strongest shot, but I think it's a quick motion, so I have somewhat of a, what can I say, tricky serve to read every now and then. If I serve well with the first serve, I feel like I get some free points because I can kind of set off the opponent's mid with that quick motion that I have. It's also, you know, a little bit my worst enemy because when it's too quick, it's I really struggle with finding first serve. So I've made a few adjustments in the preseason, you know, trying to slow down the beginning of the serve a little bit and take a little longer, deeper step back before kind of leaning into it. So I think it's been working well so far this year.
So we thought going into that match, he would really be being much more aggressive overall, but he seemed to back off against Martinez and kind of let Martinez really step up in the court, which is quite a surprise because I hadn't personally heard much of him before. Had you?
No, he was quite a new name for us. I followed him playing throughout the week and I was quite impressed by how aggressive and, you know, I like a thirst.
Yes, you love anyone who goes after it, right?
Yeah.
Hungry for it.
Hungry.
Taking the ball on, that's the way to Alina's heart on a tennis court. Well, Casper did lose that one. He did almost come back. It was very, very clutch at certain times. And Martinez, he plays today in the final against Hercatch, who's playing in his first ever clay court final. That's going to be very interesting. Hercatch has been playing a lot of clay court specialists on his way through. You'd have to give him the edge. What do you think? A tiebreak or two?
I would say at least one tiebreak on the first set.
First set tiebreak, and
first
it goes to...
Tiebreak.
You think Martinez as well, I can tell.
Yeah.
Yes, I can see it.
He had that confidence coming back of a challenger win, and he's just like, he has nothing to lose. He has less pressure than Hurkacz has.
I mean, Hurkacz in a final of a clay tournament, I'd argue that's also quite free hitting for him. Because
let's see if the watch is going to help him today.
Yes, let's. The thing that we have to cover... our peak pit and present surprise. You've actually collaborated on this one together. And the way that we have done this, we have looked at it, we've analysed it, and we've come up with our three P's. So if you would like to kick us off, we will start with, what was our pleasant surprise, Alina? Because this one relates very nicely to a certain pit that you had in Buenos Aires.
Well, if you remember, my pit from Buenos Aires was getting those... big three words.
Yes, from Cam Norrie.
For Cam Norrie. So my pleasant surprise was actually interviewing Hubi Hurkacz, who actually gave us a lot.
He was chatty.
He was chatty. And everybody was actually positively and pleasantly surprised with the amount of minutes we got from him this time, as he is very short on his answers. He's very straight to the point. But he was like very happy to chat with everybody, and he really like enjoyed, I think, the mixed zone press area chats with us.
Yeah, he did. And I think previously I've seen some very short interviews where sometimes it's under a minute that you get from him. And, you know, we asked him about Iga, he smiled, yeah. We got some smiles there, and he was very happy to answer the question. So that was also a pleasant surprise, because we heard that might be slightly challenging in terms of getting some words from him. I'll cover the pit. I think it's only fair. You know, I can let you end again on a high with our peak. With the pit, I have to say, for those who haven't been, the stadium is actually split between the corporate entertainment, almost 50-50, and the boxes with the fan stands. And so I think at 250s, for me personally, I was a bit disappointed that we weren't able to kind of have more of an atmosphere, because the crowd was so ready to, and there was still a great atmosphere, but it was kind of dominated by the corporate seats taking up over half of the stadium, which I think does make it a bit challenging to get fans in there who'd love to see these players. So for me, that's always going to be a little bit of a pit. But then in terms of the peak, we can move on quickly. And Lena, please bring us home.
Our peak this time was the Gasquet team match.
No surprises.
On an outside court, on a secondary court.
On the court. Literally on the court, snapping the pictures.
We actually looked at each other. We were like opposite sides, so we can actually see each other.
I was taking pictures of Alina, taking pictures of team. And then team took a picture of me. He didn't.
He didn't.
No, that's a lie. But no, that was definitely a highlight, getting to watch two of those players play, and especially not knowing what the future holds for them. I think that's something that we savour every minute, especially after teams' comments on seeing how 2024 goes before he decides whether he will continue. But we've had a wonderful time in Portugal. It's been absolutely incredible. And anyone who's thinking of going, if it does return, I would highly recommend. It's a fantastic time of year, and it's also a wonderful vibe in the town. It really does take over. It becomes tennis land. We will finish with trying to fulfill one of our missions with a see you next time in Portuguese. So if you would close us off, Alina.
I will try to do that. Até a próxima vez.
And back to myself, Joel and Kim, who were covering this after the tournament finishes.
Well, I have to say, I love the sound of the port wine being used as like a mixer. That sounds like a really quite a nice concept.
As we said, it gave Hugo, it really did. I think it's the closest I've come to finding something that could emulate that and kind of fulfill your desire for a Hugo when you're in Lisbon. It, of course, apart from a Hugo, a P&T.
A P&T, yeah, a port and tonic. Well, oh, love that. Thank you for
is that
being
a thing?
Considerate
I've never heard
my drinking
of,
needs.
I've never heard of that before.
P&T is not a thing, I don't think.
Oh, okay. Okay. I like it, though.
But I think they're trying to make it a thing. So, yeah, please sponsor us. We're happy to talk about it more in the podcast.
I mean, I was quite interested in the conversation because, you know, the build-up to Estoril has all been about, you know, the calendar. Is it going to appear next year? What's going on there? And it was interesting to hear about the license. And one of the things that's counting against Estoril for next season, plus the fact that there's 1 week less on the schedule, is the fact that it doesn't own the license. It leases it off someone else. And that's counted it against it in this sort of, I guess, comparison with all the other 250s events on the tour.
Yeah, they're looking to kind of reduce the number of 250s. And that's where you go first, unfortunately. So it doesn't sound like, and from all the people we spoke to there, everyone was still very optimistic, and that was the record attendance at 43,000 people attended across the week. It was a very kind of successful event for them. So I do think it will appear again. I think we have heard as well that Tyriac is not particularly a fan of this week on the calendar. So that is the Estoril week for next year. So maybe, depending how the first edition of the renewed sort of tournament in Bucharest goes, there might be a space. Hopefully we'll see it. But Kim, I did get you a present in Estoril before we covered the tennis and everything that happened. I'm going to put it on now and you can say if you like it or not.
Oh, I was wondering, you were alluding to the fact that you had a gift and I was like, what could this be? Oh, I like that. Is it bright pink?
It's bright pink, but Joel is wearing bright pink, so you can decide if he gets one as well.
It's a pink is
Joel
cap more of a for pink all of our listeners, because we're looking at it on the video. Actually, Chris, I'm going to say it's almost blinding me in terms of how pink it is.
It's very bright. It is very bright. But you're not afraid of a bold colour though, Joel,
that
are
is
you?
True. So I do like to stand out. But maybe we need to put it on our socials to let our listeners decide if it's a fashion fave or
better.
A fashion faux pas. Yeah.
Okay. Should we ask Morgan Riddle? Because she's yes. Like, you know, the fashion queen of,
you could be,
of
you
tennis.
You could be styled by the Estoril.
I was actually more of a fan, Chris, because before we started recording, you showed me an empty Vegemite pot, the same Vegemite pot that we taste tested from as part of Australian Open coverage. So it's good to see at least someone has got through their pot of Vegemite, because mine went straight in the bin.
Well, we could do a trade, because I'll give you the cap if you give me the rest of your Vegemite. Oh, because
I will get. I'll absolutely jump on that opportunity.
No, I think it's a very fetching cap. Barbie pink. So I think they've gone for a nice colour with that one.
Okay, so Kim, we'll definitely give it to you then.
Thank you.
Way more positive than Joel, but
fine. I'm not
going to
give you any Vegemite.
Oh, well, I'll have to source it in Copenhagen. But just as kind of a quick little thank you before we get into the final from Estoril. Thank you to everyone in the press team who made it such a wonderful event and made Luna and I feel so welcome and made the event possible. So that's Pedro and Miguel who ran the press, as well as Martin from the ATP. And many of the other volunteers that are also so helpful and make these sort of events possible. So thank you very much. And Kim, should we go on to the tennis?
I was quite enjoying your winner's speech there, actually. But
I'd like to thank my mum, my father, my granny.
Sounds
and
like
Joel.
Danielle Collins.
Yeah, she's very good at the winning speeches now.
Well, one player who did have to do a winner's speech was Hubert Hurkacz, because he did take the victory in Estoril 6-3, 6-4 over Pedro Martinez. So this is now his 8th ATP title, and Hubert is up to number 8 in the rankings as of today, which is his highest ever position. Well, his joint highest, so he has been up at 8 before, but he's got back up there again. In terms of his actual tennis, what did you make of him throughout the week? I mean, this is his first title on clay. So, you know, obviously ticking that box and perhaps, you know, perhaps somewhat unexpected, but obviously showing that he can demonstrate his skill on this surface.
Yeah, I was really impressed. He's one of those players, though, that you watch when he's playing well and it looks so easy. And then you see some of the players that he has tough matches against or can't get past unless there's a tie break. And you kind of question if he is a top 10 player or if he's got a top 10 serve and maybe, you know, top 20, top 30 off the ground. But I was really impressed with the way he moved. I was impressed with kind of the patience he had. This is something I spoke to him about in press as well, was the idea that he wasn't kind of pulling the trigger too early after the serve. And I thought that actually worked quite well for him. So I think he's playing much more... I guess more savvy clay court tennis than I've seen him play so far. And it felt like he was really kind of problem solving, moving into the net and adapting his game on the surface. So he's got Jack Draper in the first round of Monte Carlo. And based on what I saw this week, I think he's going to get that one probably in straight sets.
Well, he beat a fellow Brit, Jan Chwinski, in the first round in Estoril, I can see on the draw. So he's, I think given his recent form, I think I would give him the edge over Jack Draper, which, you know, perhaps a bit of a shame from a British perspective. Joel, any thoughts on Estoril? I know Chris and Alina have been giving us all the insight, but what did you make generally of the result that we got in Estoril?
Well, I think with Hurkacz, one of the reasons he is such a player who can get into the top 10 is because he is so versatile. I think he's now added himself to a list of players, active players, who've now won a tour title on all the surfaces: grass, clay, indoor hard, and outdoor hard. So it just shows that his game, even though you might look at him and think, oh yeah, he's got a big serve and he likes to come to net and that's about it, and maybe you just think, oh, he's only good on a grass court surface, but as Chris said, his movement for a big guy is exceptional, and I think that puts him in a really good place going into the clay swing. And I think his tiebreak record as well helps, playing those kind of clutch moments. And it was just generally very impressive from him throughout the week. And I will say the same thing about Pedro Martinez getting to the final. I mean, Chris, I don't know if you saw much of the match in the semi-final against Casper Ruud. I mean,
I was there.
Casper Ruud was blitzing, his competition up to the semis, it felt like. And Pedro Martinez, it just felt like he played the match of his life to win that in three sets.
I think it was a case, and we said this, Alina and I, that he did back off. He was playing much more aggressively. He allowed Martinez to step up in the court, which I was really surprised by, because when we watched his practice session, he was really being aggressive, and he kind of just put the ball back in court for those first sort of two sets and said, it's yours to miss. And Martinez wasn't missing. So I was a bit surprised, actually, that kind of going from that match to the final, that Martinez didn't make more of an impact. But in that semi-final, Casper really did go away in that third set, unfortunately. And Martinez did find it hard to close out. He couldn't make the first serves, and Casper wasn't punishing him. He sort of crawled over the line in that second set. And then in that final set, he went down, I think, 4-1 very quickly, took an injury timeout, and then almost broke back to level the match. So if I was Casper, I'd be kind of very much reeling from the fact that I probably should have won that. First top 10 win for Martinez, and you wouldn't have thought it would come against an in-form Casper Ruud on clay.
Well, it's Hubert Hurkacz who wraps up in Estoril and gets his winnings, however that may have appeared, electronically or on paper, if that failed to work. But we've also got Danielle Collins, who we mentioned earlier, who is, you know, the other sort of big story, I guess, of the past few weeks, and she won out in Charleston, and this is her second title on the trot now. She's winning on a win streak of 13 matches, but that's across hard court and clay court. You know, me and Joel, we spoke about whether she would be able to kind of transfer this form that she had in Miami to the green clay of Charleston, and she absolutely has, without any kind of fate being phased at all, just running her way through the draw, defeating Paola Badosa, Ons Jabeur, Sloane Stephens, sorry, Chris, Elise Mertens, Maria Sakkari, and Kazakina, like top names to win her second title in a row. I mean, it's just, you know, a remarkable fortnight from Danielle Collins. Joel, I'm coming to you first. At this stage, if Danielle Collins keeps this up, and where can she go with this? Could she contend for slams if she stays in this form?
Well, initially I was going to say, where's she going to go with this? She's going to go probably to her sofa at the end of the season, because it feels like she's been very defiant in terms of, this is my last season, I'm retiring at the end of it. And again, I think the pressure is off. She's playing with momentum, she's playing with swagger, and she's been so aggressive this week, just particularly I think in that final. Kasatkina just did not have any answers, and it was a sight to behold at times. I mean, her backhand win particularly was very impressive. And you do have to think, like, if she does continue this form, does she put herself as a contender for a Grand Slam title, whether that be at the French Open or even, you know, in her home country of the United States at the US Open later in the year? The way that she's playing at the moment, she's going to be seeded, it looks like, for basically all the tournaments to come for the rest of the season. I wouldn't put it past her with the way she's playing at the moment.
It's building up to what could be a remarkable crescendo at the US Open, isn't it? I think that would be a real ticket. And she's the sort of player that US Open crowd loves, because she's so expressive on the court and she really does just bring it to her opponents. So I think, and from listening to you guys last week, I was in the exact same boat of thinking I would forgive her a first round exit or an early exit here to Ons Jabeur or someone like that. Not necessarily for Paola Badosa, or I thought she might pull out, but to come away with the title back to back. I mean, she also talks about some of the physical issues that she has from an endometriosis perspective. And that's also partly why she is looking at retiring at the end of this season, because having a family is a priority for her. And it just feels like she's just leaving it all on the court. She's going to have the farewell tour is a farewell tour where everything is a bonus, but not in the sense that she's not competing, but it's, I want to give it my all, my like best shot. And I mean, it's the sort of tennis that Joel and I mean, we've known she could play it for years. We've seen her play unbelievably before, and she's playing even better than when she made the final in Australia.
It's really going out on an absolute high.
It's really interesting, yeah. You talk about Australia, because she played Barty in that final, and you know, to think of a final that was, you know, relatively been quite recent, to think both of those players at the end of this season, they will be players who are going out on their terms. Barty did it her way. She, you know, retired at the top. You know, Świątek came in, and it looks like Collins is almost kind of going down the same track at the moment.
It's very honourable, and it's very nice to see people who are in control of their exit from tennis in a positive way. I think for so many players, financially, it might not be possible for them to step away when they want to. And for lots of players, injury sort of prematurely ends it, or they don't want to say goodbye to the sport. So I actually think probably it's just making for a much nicer time, because everyone's taking more interest in her and everyone's kind of making sure that they have those moments with her from the locker room. I know that Sloane's a good friend of hers as well. And, you know, everyone's very kind of happy for her success, because, I mean, she got beaten by her very comfortably. And she said, you know what, like it's Danielle's year, basically.
I will say, Chris, she won the doubles though, didn't she?
Her first ever doubles title. She's up to 105
Come on,
in the doubles
Sloane
rankings.
Her brilliant. Grand, that doubles, yeah. WTA top 100.
She's hoping.
Oh, well, it's another trophy, isn't it, for the trophy cabinet. But yeah, Danielle Collins just steamrolling her way past Kazakhina in the final in just over an hour and 15 minutes. After a kind of dicey few opening games, it was, you know, just dominant, 6-2, 6-1. So well done, Danielle Collins.
Chris, can you tell me how Kazakhina is where she is just on the serve? And the serve has got better. And I get that, like, her ball placement is fantastic. I actually think it needs to be, because of the lack of pace that she has. But why is Kazakhina such a difficult competitor when there are fans like me almost like flummoxed in terms of like looking at her as serve speed and thinking that's almost like not out of place at club level?
I think, to be honest, a lot of the girls on tour do hit the ball very hard, and generating all of your own pace is not something they're used to doing. I think they quite often they get a hard ball off a serve and they can almost kind of use that pace. Whereas with Kasatkina, it can really get quite ugly because there's nothing on it. And if you start missing a serve that you know is not quick and you should be taking advantage of, you can actually start to be quite annoyed in yourself quite quickly. And so you have to do what Danielle did, which is attack it, attack it, attack it. Something that Garcia also does, where you have to step in and go for it. Because if you don't, then you're waiting and then you end up playing tennis that is not front foot tennis at all. But I mean, for Kasatkina, as you said, I mean, what she can do from a shot making perspective, the top spin she gets, I mean, she's an unbelievable player off the ground. But you just have to think, how much higher would she be in the rankings if she had a half decent serve?
And that wouldn't be the first person we've kind of had that assessment of, I think, really, especially at the top of the rankings.
It's like Dementieva all over again.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. It's exactly like that.
Yeah. Quite a good week for JPEG as well, getting to the semi-final and then just bowing out to Kasatkina in that kind of tight
semi.
Did you see that
match with Azarenka? Why can't Azarenka get over the line, Joel? What's going on?
I don't think Azarenka lost it, to be honest, on those... I mean, maybe on that first match point, but...
Did she have four?
She had four, but I think Jessica Pegula just played out of her skin in those match points down... moments. It could have gone either way, but it was nice to see, I think, Pabula coming back into form somewhat. Very tight against, you know, Kasatkina, but yeah, a real wild one that could have gone either way against Azarenka.
Yeah, well, we've got some other tournaments to wrap up. Some quite a lot of 250s going on all around the world. We had the Marrakesh event, the Grand Prix Hassan 2, which Matteo Berrettini won. This is his first title since winning Queens back in 2022.
Wow.
So almost 2 years since he's picked up a title. And he beat Roberto Carballes Baena in the final 7-5, 6-2, which is actually ending Carballes Baena's 9-match winning streak. This is super nice for Berrettini to kind of pick up another title, isn't it? And on clay as well, where we don't typically think of him as a, you know, a clay courter, you know, but he has won titles on all surfaces. But we do think, oh, you know, if he's excelling on the grass, you know, especially the grass of Queens. But really nice for him to kind of pick back up his title winning ways. Chris, what did you make of Berrettini kind of back to winning ways?
I mean, I'm very pleased to see that he's doing it on the tennis court again, because I think he's probably the most familiar face of anyone in men's tennis with his Hugo Boss campaigns, which are everywhere, every airport, every bus stop, every billboard. He's almost more known for being a model than he is a tennis player at this point. So I think it's great to get the reminder that he is a very serious tennis player. He does take his tennis seriously and he does want to get back up to the top because he has so much talent. He might not have the best backhand in the game, but he does have a fantastic forehand and a fantastic serve and a fantastic attitude. So I think it's great that he's getting it done, especially on clay. I mean, obviously playing in Italy, he would have grown up on clay. But as we talked about, I mean, the last title was on grass. He is such a great grass court player. That's where he's reached his Grand Slam final. And I remember how unlucky he's been. So this is someone who we all want to see winning because he had to pull out of that Wimbledon with COVID in 2022, which seems crazy to say that. And they had to actually review their COVID protocols after that. And so hopefully luck will now be on his side, because 2022 Wimbledon, he was looking like a very good bet. Mm. So I think this is something that will be very positive going into the clay season, but also hopefully if he can stay healthy the grass season.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, he's coming back from injury, and I wonder, like, looking at his game and the fact that arguably it is limited compared to other players in terms of, yes, it's reliant on a big serve, big forehand. He's got, you know, his backhand's not as strong, but I wonder actually, coming back from injury, whether just having such a simple game that is very rooted in basics and kind of certain shots, it actually means he can get back to his best quicker because he knows what he's good at. It's a few things. It's not like I have to be the complete package in order to work my way up. And I think, you know, this week it was just very refreshing, I think, to see him on the court, get back to those roots. he did well in Phoenix in that challenger in the States, and you know, he's continued it on. So it's a good title for him to win that sets up his clay court season. And I think, as Chris alluded to, the tantalizing prospect of Berrettini back to his best for the grass court season, hopefully injury free, that could be a sight to behold.
Yeah, and one player as well I would be quite keen to see in form on the grass court is Ben Shelton, who picked up the Houston Open trophy against Francis Tiafoe in the final. It was an all-American final. Three sets it was. Ben Shelton coming past to become the youngest ever champion at this event, and also to become the US number one for the first time. So a bit of a change at the top of the US men's rankings there. But yeah, Shelton getting the job done, winning on the clay. And that's pretty good for him on clay, because coming before this tournament, he had a 2-7 tour level record on the clay and hadn't won a match in five matches on the surface. So great for him that he's sort of got that monkey off his back, as you like to say, Joel. What did you make of Ben Shelton's performance out in Houston?
I was shocked more than anything, given his record going in. But, you know, the rewards are there. You know, Taylor Fritz has crashed out early in Monte Carlo, and it's the reason next week that Ben Shelton is going to rise to US number one. But yeah, across the week, I think he was just kind of finding himself out on the surface. And you know, I do look at his game and I think, yeah, he can apply himself there. It's just very early days in his career, and I don't think he's had that many opportunities to do it. And I think when you come up against, you know, someone like a Francis Tiafoe, you're going to get opportunities. And it was actually quite a fun final, because I think they're both showmans in their own respect. And it was just this time that Shelton came back on top. But certainly when you come up against Echeverry in the semis, come through that in three tough sets, I feel like you're learning as you're going on clay. And yeah, I think you'll be very pleased with it.
And I was also going to say something around the fact that the Sheltons are now the only joining an exclusive list of father-son duos who've won multiple tour-level titles in the Open era. That was a tongue twister. Can you name the other father-son duo? Because I could not.
Casper Ruud and his dad?
Ooh. It's not.
No?
That's a very good shout.
It's not the
I
other
think his
one.
His father actually never won a title.
Oh, no.
I can give you...
Taylor Dent. And
it
his
is.
Dad.
It's Phil Dent and well Taylor done. Dent. Kim, please keep some of this very good knowledge for Joel's game later.
Oh, well, we'll see
Save
about
it
that.
Up.
But yeah, Ben Shelton, you know, like you said, it's about working your way through on a surface that's probably quite unfamiliar. But if you're coming away with a home title while you're at it, that's great. And also a good week for Tiafoe, because he hasn't had a very good start to the year particularly. So finding a bit of form for him as well.
Just quickly, Shelton, US men's number one next week, takes over from Taylor Fritz. Taylor Fritz, I saw he's been US men's number one for the last, I think, 100 plus weeks or so. Is this... What is this? Does it signify anything? Does it not? How are you assessing this moment?
I don't think Taylor Fritz ever hit the heights. And I think Ben Shelton probably has a higher ceiling. So I'm very much looking forward to the rise of Ben Shelton. I would love him to kind of emulate the success of Coco Gauff. I mean, we talk about it a lot, the different gens and all of this. And I'm very much here for the younger talent coming through and doing some amazing things. And I think it's just... a generation that's much less controlled by the case of maybe failing to achieve all of your goals. I think it's very much more free tennis. And so in terms of significance, I think it might make it a bit more interesting. You know, I think Taylor Fritz.
is that exclusive? Is Taylor Dent coming back onto
yeah,
the tour?
He's coming back. He wants to be the US number one. But no, I do think that Taylor Fritz, it probably will put the fire in his belly, because there is a group of very good American players, and hopefully all three of those players can be playing really well. But Joel, you're a big Fritz fan. What do you think? Will he get the number one spot back?
I think so, to be honest. I think we're going to be in a period now of it's just going to go to and fro.
Swapping.
Yeah, I think. And I think Francis Tiafoe can also put himself back up there. You know, I think he should be. He's not had the greatest start to the season, a little bit indifferent. But yeah, I'm hoping they can kind of kick on. I think it's always curious with these events because although it's on clay, it's on American clay. And I'll be curious to see if they can translate that form from the American clay where they're playing majority of Americans just on a clay surface to, you know, to Europe, where I think the competition is probably a little bit stronger, as Taylor Fritz has kind of found out in round one. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how Ben Charlton kind of goes going into the European clay events coming up. And yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Absolutely. Well, one final tournament from the past week was the WTA 250 out in Bogota. This was sadly not won by Tatiana Maria for the third time in a row.
Cancel the tournament.
Big shame. Big shame. But it was won by Camila Osorio for the second time. She had won the title previously in 2021. So seemingly this tournament can either only be won by Osorio or Tatiana Maria. They're keeping it between the two of them. But yeah, Osorio came through over Buzkova 6-3, 7-6 in the final. So yeah, a nice story for her. She is Colombian, so she won at her home event. Any thoughts from you, Chris, on Camila Osorio's win out in Bogota? I'm sure you probably didn't see too much of this, what with being busy in Estoril and the time difference.
I saw some clips. I didn't get to see all of it, but what I mainly took from it was the great atmosphere and the fact that it's one of those sort of performances that can only happen in front of a home crowd. And Joel, you made the comparison before we started this. It was almost like a Fed Cup or a Davis Cup match. And Buzkova and her, they had a great sort of embrace at the net. Clearly, she was also embracing the environment that she was in. I know that it plays quite strangely in Bogota. I think we had the Davis Cup tie there where the balls don't bounce.
Very high above
sea level.
So
I'm not sure what this means for the clay season going forward. But I mean, you love to see it. I mean, very, very happy fans and a very happy winner. And when she's playing well, she can be very wily as a competitor. She can be tricky. But she hasn't made much of an impact since she has had that career high of 33. She's now at 63. And it'd be great to see her competing more regularly at some of these tournaments.
Britain's Fran Jones also was in the draw. Got one win, but then lost to Ziegman. But she's in the GB Fed Cup. Or Billie Jean King Cup squad, I should say.
We're all at it now. The Taylor Dent Cup? No.
Yeah, I can't keep up to date with the... it's like the ATP rankings. It's the PIF ATP rankings. The PIF
Nito's
rankings.
Nito's gone, is it?
Doesn't quite have the right ring to it, does it? But
no.
Yes. Anyway, so well done, Osorio. We're going to take a quick break now after wrapping up all those tournaments. But do join us in the second half where we'll be looking at Saudi Arabia securing the WTA end of season finals for the next 3 years. The new doubles rules being trialled in Madrid. And also we'll be looking ahead to the Monte Carlo Masters. So do not go anywhere.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast. Now we're going to move on to another edition of Joel's Game.
Yes, Joel's Game.
Which I'm quite looking forward to. And I'm glad it's not another name as many players in the top 100 whose names begin with the letter B and end with an S or something.
Alex Diminar, I have to say, Kim, I texted you as soon as I listened and said, Yes. That's such a Kim thing to miss while she got some of the harder names out there.
You weren't the only one to text me when people listened to that, I have to say. Yeah, shocker.
Trial by Tennis Weekly listeners. Hopefully you go better in this edition of Joel's Game. I would like to remind you both, you have not completed Joel's Game so far. You got very, very close the last time we did this. So maybe you can go one step further this week. As a reminder to our listeners, the way this game works is it's basically higher, lower, or same with rankings, career high rankings of tennis players. And Chris, you're going to be loving this edition because this is actually a WTA edition of
Right,
game.
This is the time, Kim.
This could be the time.
Okay, let's do this.
Alex de Minaur is not a WTA player. We can do this.
Alexandra de Minaur, on the other hand, no.
Does he have a sister?
No. Right. So the first player I'm going to give you, and remember, it's higher, lower, or same. 5 points. You've completed Joel's game. Can you do it? Let's go. Right. The first player I'm going to give you as our marker is Alison van Utvank.
Ooh.
So current ranking
no,
of Alison
no
van
skin
Utvank.
In the game here just yet, but any
no, career
ranking.
High. Career high.
Career, oh, career high, high. Sorry, yeah, of course.
I think she's been a cheeky 30? Seed at a slam, maybe like 31.
I
mean, I'm notoriously
but
bad at this game. Okay, maybe you're right.
We could how about 32? Because I 30, think
let's do the midpoint of us. Let's do like, is that 34, 35? 34, let's do.
You should have just listened to Kim because it was bang on. It was 37.
You're joking.
Alison van Utvank, career high 37.
You should only play Joel's game when I'm not here and then Kim can just win.
So yes, that is your starting, that's your starting point. So the player I'm going to give you is Elena Vezhnina. Higher, lower, or same?
She was handy.
Oh, she was high. Oh, much higher.
She won Indian Wells, I'm pretty sure. I would say maybe 13.
I want to say top
'cause you
10.
You get 1,000 points for Indian Wells, but she didn't do much else that season, I think. I don't know. I'm saying
she was
13.
Very strong doubles. I would say maybe just into the like the 9 in the world. But
we're saying
yeah,
higher, though.
It's definitely higher, isn't it? Yeah.
Higher?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is correct, yes. Elena Vezhnina, career high 13 in the world.
Kim! Combined, we've got it bang
hey, well
on,
done.
One of us each time.
So that is okay, 1 point.
I'm too excited. We've got
that
one
point.
That is
1 point.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
We haven't started.
Okay. Next player is Coco Vandeweghe. Higher, lower, or same?
She's been higher. She had that semi final.
Really?
Some difference.
She lost to Venus Williams in the semi final at the 2017 Australian Open. And she had a bit of form that year.
So do we think she just like crept into the top 10 at one point?
I think she's been top 10. But
I'm going to push you for answer.
I'd say 9.
Let's
I think
go
she's
higher.
Been seeded 9, but never top 8.
Let's go higher then.
That is correct. Yes, it is higher. It was a good thing you didn't listen to Kim because, yes, Coco Vandeweghe's career high ranking is 9 in the world. So she just scraped into the top 10.
We are sharp shooting.
I completely forgot that happened, but yes. She got to 2 semi-finals in singles Grand Slams in the same season, which I think probably helped things.
Where was the second one? Was it the US Open then?
Yes, US Open and...
It was definitely Australian.
Australian and US Open,
Venus.
I believe. Maybe it was that year it was 4 Americans got to the US Open semis, didn't they, or something, maybe. I don't know. Right. So you've got 2 points. Your next player is Barbora Strichkova.
I think lower.
That has
my
to be lower.
Initial thought, yeah.
She reached a Wimbledon semi, but I don't think she went much higher than that. I'm saying lower, maybe 19.
Yeah, I would say no higher than like 15 for sure.
Lower?
Lower, Joel, please.
Yeah.
That is correct, yes. Barbora Tereshkova, 16 career high ranking. So that is 3 points. 3 points. You are over halfway to potentially completing Jane's game.
Well done, Jane.
To potentially completing Joel's game. The next player I'm going to give you for your fourth point is Elise Cornet.
Ooh, this is going to be a tough one.
Surely, I think higher.
No, this is going to be close. She's never been top. Oh, has she been top 10? This is hectic.
Well, she might not have been top 10, but she could have been 14 in the world.
Oh, she's been above 16, I think, yeah.
Well, then it's higher. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say maybe never top 10, maybe 11 or 12.
Yeah, I think like 13, maybe. Yeah, so recovering higher.
Three races, higher. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That is correct. Yes, Elise Cornet has gone higher. Her career high is 11. So just outside the top 10. So that is your fourth point. You are 1 point away.
We've got to do
it. You were here last time. And
if we complete it, do I have to play it again?
you ballsed it up last time. So can you go one better? So I gave you Elise Cornet career high 11.
Mm-hmm.
The player that is standing between you and completing Joel's game is Roberta Vinci.
Oh.
That is a tough one, but number 9 is screaming to me.
Really? Well, I trust your gut instinct, Chris.
But let's think about this. Grand Slam semi-final, for sure.
But what else I think she's would been she top have done 10. To get into the top 10? Yeah. Well, I'm happy to go with your gut feeling. I would probably have said around the set. Is it? Could it be the same? Is Joel tempting us with the same? But no, let's go with higher. I think you're right, Chris. I trust you.
Yeah, are we going to do it?
Yeah.
I think same, maybe number 9.
So
not same. Sorry, higher. What am I saying?
Same or higher or lower?
Definitely higher. Sorry, higher.
That is correct. Yes. Roberta Vinci is higher. You have completed Joel's game for the very first time. Her career
Amazing.
High ranking, number 7. She got to the US Open final in 2015.
Oh, the final. Against,
she beat Serena. Panetta. Did she beat Serena Williams in the semis?
Yeah, she did. That was to stop Serena getting the calendar Grand Slam. I'll never forgive
it's
her.
It's one of those ones you look back on and think.
Burn on my brain.
Yeah, that was a miss moment. But yes. However, you have completed Joel's game. Very well done for the very first time. 5 points. I wonder if any of our listeners also completed Joel's game.
Let us know, because we've never come this far before. And I believe our listeners have come way further.
Yes. Thank you very much, Joel, for another rendition of the game. And first time for us completing it. So excellent. Go us. Well, it was more you, Chris, but let's now have a look in the mailbag, because we do have a question from Stephen, who got in touch with us via email. Stephen has said, "Hi, Joel, Kim and Chris. Of the following Grand Slam champions, how many more Grand Slams do you think each of them will win, if any, and which ones?" The four players in question are Naomi Osaka, Elena Rybakina, Marketa Vondrousova and Emma Raducanu. So
that's a tough mailbag. That is a tough mailbag.
Thanks very much, Stephen, for that question. Let's go round. I'll say one of the players and then we're just going to kind of shout out the number that comes to our minds first. I don't know how you might have put a lot.
I haven't prepared.
This, but we're putting you on the spot. So let's start with Naomi Osaka. How many more slams do we think she's going to win, if at all? Joel?
One. On a hard court.
Ooh, Chris?
I don't want to say it, but I do think she's not going to win another one.
Oh, really? Okay. She hasn't really excelled, has she, since coming back? So
I think
far.
She's got the game. It's just you've got to be on tour very consistently. And I think Wozniacki is also finding the difficulty there. So I'm going to say 0.
I'm going to say 1. Because I think she could just have like a flash in the pan.
Oh, but she's winning
Open.
The Olympics, remember you predicted, Kim.
Oh, yeah,
so that's fine.
On clay. Okay, well.
She's winning the French.
Next player, Elena Rybakina. Chris, coming to you first. Rybakina.
I think as long as she can get that serve in, she's going to have chances. So I think she's going to win three.
That number was in my mind. I'm going to say two more. Because, yeah, I agree. She's current. She's consistent. It's just kind of putting it together.
She's like always right up there.
Yeah.
I'm going three as well. She's okay. On the tour.
She should have won more already.
She's got a great game. Yeah. I'm going three.
Longevity. Marketa Vondrousova, another Wimbledon champion. I'm going to say zero. I'm jumping in there with zero.
I'd probably agree with you. I think she might have another deep run somewhere, but I think the goal and the dream is Wimbledon. And once you've got that, it's very hard to stay motivated in the same way.
She might want to add to the tattoos, though.
Going with zero as well.
Oh, unanimous zero. Yeah. I know, I do feel a bit like rude.
She's just so talented. She's made multiple finals, so I'm sure that she can still do it. But we have to give our prediction.
And Emma Raducanu, last but not least.
This is a tricky one, isn't it? Probably, I'd go 24?
Yeah, 24. Career slam next year.
Yeah, no, I think she's going to... I will always say that she'll do it again. And then I think she might bounce. I think.
So just one more, you think?
She's so talented. And I would never want to say zero. But I'm a Raducanu fan, as you know.
I'm going to say... This sounds like really negative, but I'm going to say zero, but she'll win a mixed doubles at Wimbledon in 10 years' time.
Kim, I was going to make a joke about that with Jamie Murray.
Jamie Murray, he'll be about
Jamie Murray won't be playing
then.
In 10 years.
Yeah, doubles players, they play till they're very old now. So
true. I mean, the world number one is 43.
I'm going with one. I think there is another one in there, but I think we're going to be... I think we're going to be waiting a while.
A mid-20s.
Well, listeners, do any of you disagree? Stephen, do you totally disagree with what
let us know, Stephen.
because that was kind of our gut instincts to that question. But it's a very interesting one. So thank you so much. And do remember, listeners, to send us in your questions because we do love answering them each week. And that brings us on to the news from the last week. The big one being that Saudi Arabia have announced that they are going to host the WTA finals for the next 3 years. This isn't a big surprise. We've talked at length about the fact that the Saudi Arabian, public investment fund and what have you are, obviously investing in the ATP. And now the Saudi Arabia are investing in women's tennis in this way, offering a gigantically increased prize money for the WTA finals. Significant increase on the previous prize fund. It's going up from $9 million to $15.5 million for those finals. So somewhat inevitable perhaps, but regardless, a lot of controversy around this news. Chris, what do you make of this and the challenges that I think maybe are going to come in the coming kind of months and years as we build up to the first rendition of the finals in Saudi?
I think firstly, the news was something we were all waiting to hear. I think we've been seeing kind of the soft launch last year where it was potentially floated, the idea of having it in Saudi Arabia. And then obviously it was awarded to Cancun. I think finding a permanent home or a more permanent home for this event is a positive. I do think it being in Saudi Arabia, for me, is a negative. I do think that an event like this isn't a case of what Steve Simon is saying of supporting significant change being made within the region. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's they threw a lot of money at the WTA and under Steve Simon's leadership, they can't afford to refuse it. And therefore, they're in a situation where if the ATP is taking the Saudi money, the WTA will only fall further behind if they don't. I think it's a step backwards for women's tennis. I'm firmly with Navratilova and Chris Evert there. I think the arguments that you can't change something unless you kind of have people go there. But I mean, there are many challenges this will present from a crowd, from will women be allowed to attend and in what capacity will women be allowed to attend? Will anyone be there? Because
will anyone
it's not coming
attend?
From a...
I mean, look at
exactly.
The next gen.
I mean, it can't be...
Look at the next gen finals that have been there. The crowds have been almost like next to zero. And I'm just thinking, like, do you remember when the WTA finals were? What was it in
Fort Worth?
Yeah, in Fort Worth. It's at the moment I'm picturing like that, but now with the complete negative cloud association of Saudi Arabia with it.
and the human rights record. So I think it will be exactly like that. And because of Steve Simon's poor leadership of having two WTA finals that lost money, you have to say they can't afford, from a player perspective, to reject it either. Jessa Pegula has spoken about the positives of this and some of the things that they've been shown as part of making this decision or helping to make this decision. But overall, I do think that it is a big shame. It's a lot of money, and there's a lot of money there. So is it inevitable that the tour will go in that direction? Is this another piece taking it that way?
So you might win the tournament, get a big paycheck, or you know, whether that'll be a check or some
bank transfer.
Robots. Yeah. but you might have no atmosphere, no crowd, no international fans going there. I mean, it doesn't really tempt me to get on a plane to Riyadh and go and watch tennis there. I have to say, I'm not going to be doing that anytime soon.
We did ask our audience, though, Kim, I have to say, and we'll see if you agree with this as well. So we asked how our audience felt about the WTA finals moving to Riyadh, and 13% said it was great for the WTA, 55% said they thought it was a shame, and 31% have mixed feelings. And so I think that's probably quite representative of people that I've spoken to as well. Where do you stand on it?
I mean, obviously, I think actually, you know, for people in that area, in that region, genuine tennis fans who are in the Middle East, it will be closer for them to go to. So I'm conscious that I'm coming from a very like westernized perspective. Like, oh, international fans won't want to go there. But, you know, I can see the possible positive benefits of having it there, bringing it to an audience there. But it's just, yeah, in reality, what is the actual experience of a woman in Saudi Arabia who wants to get involved with tennis? Is this going to help that happen? Is it going to emancipate them? Until we see it, I guess we can't fully judge. But I'm just, yeah, I think a bit cynical, quite sceptical.
Yeah, I think it's a decision just, I don't know, to me it just stinks. And it doesn't feel like the full stop. It feels like another thing that Saudi Arabia have got their hands on. And, you know, what's next? It feels like a 1,000 event is now, you know, inevitable. But from the WTA point of view, it's just a decision motivated by money at the expense of everything else. And you've got to look at the leadership. And I know we've spoken about Steve Simon before, and just under his leadership of the WTA, it's just been not great. You know, they've got themselves into this mess. And what I thought was like him stepping back, but actually he's just made himself effectively into a new position where he's still got control. He's still making, you know, decisions that aren't particularly happy with anyone. And you just sort of think he's doing it maybe for himself, or, you know, for the benefit of just kind of money, and he's not really thinking about anything else. And that's what's, I think, a big shame, is that we've got amazing talent and players on the tour at the moment, and they deserve a spectacle that is fitting of an end of season finals. And at the moment, based on what we see of the next gen finals, I just don't think we're going to get that. And I think the sad thing for me is that the leadership, the people who've made this decision at the WTA, I don't think they personally care. They've gone with this. They want the money. That may appease the players. But when you're looking at it from a fan point of view, I just think it's a bit sad given the talent that they have at their disposal.
And if you look at the players, I mean, not all players would necessarily be welcomed there. With Daria Kasatkina, who's in a same-sex relationship, she's voiced her opposition for this move. And you think WTA have to be able to put people in safe environments. And I think that's also something where you might look at it from being better for the players, but is it better for inspiring all aspects of a community? It might be for a very small proportion of a Saudi community, but not for the community at large.
Yes, well, lots to ponder as the, you know, as we get closer to that event. And I'm sure there'll be some other news regarding Saudi Arabia and their investment in tennis as well to come before we get to the finals.
The Saudi Slam.
The Saudi Slam. Well, gosh, let's wait and see.
I mean, it is really like that. Like, where does this end? Does it end? You know,
I think there'll be another Grand Slam in the next 2 years.
We're going through, is it the Netflix Slam?
That's already there, yeah.
We're going
the Desert
through
Slam.
I think, you know, the tennis landscape is going through so much change at the moment. I hate to use the word unprecedented, but it does feel like sometimes that maybe is around the corner, particularly at the speed, you know, things are operating. You know, we spoke about Saudi Arabia dipping their toe into tennis almost, what, like a few months ago. And the way it's sort of ramped up so quickly, yeah, it makes
They're
me think...
They're fully submerged now, Joel. Mm. They haven't just dipped their toes in.
Yeah, and it makes you think, where does this stop? Where does it end? Does it end? And you wonder what's the next thing now that they're going to try and get their paws on. You know, I think a 1,000 event is realistic. And Chris, maybe you're right. Maybe a Grand Slam in Saudi Arabia is not...
Can only be appeased for so long. Yeah. I mean, the ATP and WTA finals, that's very easy to locate there. But if you're paying that much money, you're going to start to have more expectations. You start to come depend on that money. And then, as you say, where does it end?
Well, let's move on to the next bit of news, because we do have a bumper episode today of tournaments and news and all sorts happening.
It's all happening, isn't it, Kim?
On the tennis circuit. Never a dull moment. We've got some news coming out about the doubles format, which is going to be trialled. A new doubles format is going to be trialled in Madrid. So in a couple of weeks' time at the Masters event in Madrid, they're changing it up to, I guess, make doubles... again, seem more appealing and appetizing to fans. You know, they sort of did this a few years ago, and now they're kind of ramping it up again. They're trying to get more singles players involved by reserving slots in the draw for teams to enter with their singles ranking. So trying to get more of the top singles guys in. And they are streamlining the schedule. So it's just going to take place over 5 days in the second week. They're reducing the shot clock. So we've only got 15 seconds between points. And quicker changeovers, fans being able to move freely, so not having to wait for change of ends, etc. Do you think this is needed, or do you think this is just, again, just trying to make doubles a bit more kind of commercially friendly, trying to get more top names involved so they can kind of sell the doubles tour, so to speak?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. For me, the big one is around the making it as appetizing, I think, to singles players as possible. And I get that from a marketing point of view, and you know, you want to create interesting matchups, and a way to do that is to bring characters from the ATP tour who maybe are a lot more in the singles category and bringing them over to doubles. However, my worry with this is that I feel like there are great stories in doubles already, and they should be focusing more on surfacing this and particularly kind of doubles players who make a living on the tour, and not making them, I guess, feel threatened by, well, actually, we're going to give reserve slots to singles players. I think they're going about it in the wrong way, and I think there needs to be more focus on, like, the potential of doubles, the stories that are going on in doubles at the moment, the characters that are already there, as opposed to threatening that environment from the outside with singles players who, let's be honest, at the moment, it just feels like sometimes with doubles draws at big events, they almost kind of treat it maybe as a warm-up, or even they just kind of withdraw to focus on their singles if they go deep in a tournament. So it feels like I'm not really clear why, I guess, it's getting rewarded, that sort of behaviour is getting rewarded, to me, at the expense of doubles players who, you know, put their heart and soul into this, you know, to make their living on the tour.
I'm a bit different from you there, Joel, because what annoys me is that realistically, and I've talked about this with Andy Murray previously, if some of these singles players were to play doubles, they would be top 10 doubles players without question. And when you watch some of these singles players play, maybe it's the Davis Cup for the doubles, you realize that they are actually a cut above. And especially in Estoril this last week, the doubles standard was not very high. There was not really names at all that were playing. There was very little interest in it. So I think there's something that can be done to kind of boost the interest in it. I do think reserving the places is quite a strange one. You could just say you could enter via your singles ranking or your doubles ranking. That might be a better way of doing it. But ultimately, I do think that unless you get the singles players playing it, that the interest won't be there. I think doing it this way might not be the best way of doing it, because I still think you do get quite a lot of wild cards that go to singles players anyway. But ultimately, it makes for a more appealing spectacle for many people. And these are the best tennis players in the world. It's not like they wouldn't be the best doubles players in the world. And I think that's something that doubles players are very lucky that singles players don't play more doubles, because then it would be even harder for them to make a living.
I mean, the tour is so long and has so many tournaments. As appealing as you can make it, I guess, to singles players with slots potentially reserved for them, like, is there a chance that, like, they just might not get taken up by, like, high profile players because of how much they've got on their workload at the moment? Do they want to add to that? Not sure.
Well, then you might have to fall back on the doubles players that you said you didn't want. You know, it's not going to be plain sailing at all. And I think that they need to coexist rather than transfer to singles players playing doubles and doubling up each week. It's great when it works, but at the same time, not many Grand Slam champions do that week in, week out.
There will always be a place for the Daniel Nesters of the world, for me.
Daniel.
The core doubles players.
Max Murray.
Yeah. I see both sides, but yeah, I do sort of think how many top singles players are going to take this offer up. Is it going to make that much change? But, you know, this is a trial. It doesn't mean it's going to happen long term. It, you know, may not work in Madrid. It may do. We'll see how it goes.
15 seconds isn't long though, Kim, is it?
That's for rallies less than four shots. So I think they're still having
15 seconds.
I was going to say,
rallies
at less than four shots, it would reduce the time between points to 15. Because, yeah, otherwise, if you get a long doubles rally, you're a singles player, it becomes even more tiring, doesn't it? I've got less time to recover between points. That's not going to entice them. So, yeah, we will see how that goes down in Madrid. But let's look at what is happening this week. We've got Monte Carlo, which started yesterday. The defending champion, Andre Rublev, is there. Unfortunately, one player who won't be there is Rafael Nadal, who did withdraw from the event, say that although he's been working hard, making the maximum effort every day with all the will to play and compete again at tournaments, the truth is that he cannot play. So he's just not ready to come back yet to the tour, which is obviously a real shame.
Kim, Rafa expert, where does Rafa go from here in the clay swing, where so many people want to see him back on his favourite surface?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of glad I didn't arrange to go to Monte Carlo with the explicit intention of trying to see him, because it is a lovely tournament anyway. So, you know, if anyone has gone, you'll still have a lovely time. It's not a surprise. I think he's obviously having some real long-term issues, and, you know, he's just going to, I think, try and build up to come back and maybe, yeah, have one last crack at Roland Garros, perhaps. I mean, it doesn't bode well, though, does it, for any sort of longevity from here on? And it does seem like it might be the final hurdle. Sad.
Will he play past Roland Garros, do you think?
I think if he does make it to Roland Garros, that would probably take an awful lot out of him, depending on how far he went. So I feel that even if he did play a bit of the clay season, he would potentially skip the grass.
Because he could get injured before he plays Roland Garros, could also be the thinking,
exactly,
right? Like he did in Australia.
He might come back to like Rome and then, you know, play a match and it's just not happening. So, yeah, I'd like to be able to see, you know, I'd love him to be able to play a proper tournament rather than just never coming back. You know, I just hope he can finish
Barcelona
on his terms.
Would be lovely, right?
Yeah, Barcelona would be nice at home in Spain. So we'll see. We'll await his announcements and just have to accept.
Fingers crossed.
The situation at the moment, as he is unfortunately having to contend with. But we wish him all the best and we await his return. But we do have the tournament still taking place, of course. Novak Djokovic is the top seed. Jannik Sinner is the second seed. And we do have the defending champion, Andre Rublev. Who's winning Monte Carlo this year then? Is it going to be a Sinner Djokovic final, do we think? And any particular thoughts?
I think Djokovic is going out to Musetti in round three.
Ooh, he's losing again to Musetti.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you expect to see a different Novak Djokovic at Monte Carlo?
I really do.
What, you think we're going to back to the all singing, all dancing, imperious Novak Djokovic that's going to live up to top seed?
I'm not saying it's going to be imperious, but I think he's going to be playing some great tennis. And I've seen, you know, he'll be the only one to win all of them three times if he does it. He does love a record. Yeah. That could motivate him. But for this draw, I mean, it is quite open, really. I think I'd love to see a good run for Holger again. I think he's got quite a tough draw, but I think it is open. There's a lot of players who haven't been playing their best tennis, defending champion, not playing his best tennis. Andre Rublev, Alcaraz, rumours of injury, might not even play against Felix, Oja Alassim in the next round. So that top half, that could spring an upset.
I think it a stacked draw, isn't it? But I'm going to go Djokovic, I think.
I think I am as well.
Yeah, I think he didn't play Miami. He's had time to recoup. He's at home in Monte Carlo. So, yeah.
I'd love to say Casper, but I just, based on what I saw, I'm not sure I can predict that.
They'll have lovely towels there, though.
The towels will be lovely, monogram.
I'm back in the Sinner train. I'm still on the Sinner swing, the Sinner momentum.
What a boring prediction, John.
I think it's just going to be. Seeds. I just think he's playing the best tennis at the moment on the tour, and I think he's going to kind of continue that. I'm quite curious to see how Grigor Dimitrov gets on in this tournament, because he's had a good
Berrettini
run.
Could be playing him second round. Yeah.
And Chris, I'm surprised you haven't brought up
Nagal.
Nagal. Mm.
Yes, the first Indian player to win a main draw match in Monte Carlo.
Lovely.
I was thrilled. I was watching it earlier. It was a very good win, and he's come through qualifying as well. So he'll be at a career high ranking. And hopefully, the higher he gets in the ranking, the more funding he gets and the better he can get, because he's a real talent.
We've got quite an interesting round two clash. Alcaraz, Felix Auger-Aliassime, which not too long ago, that would have been blockbuster. Like, you would have maybe even thought that was too...
Final of a tournament.
Yeah, final of a tournament. We've not really mentioned Alcaraz so far. So we're not vibing that Alcaraz is going to...
I think he's injured. Rumour is he's injured. So
Felix might actually get a win then.
If he retires, yeah, maybe.
I mean, I would say if Danielle Collins was in the draw, she's winning it. But
she's not.
And let's bring us on to what the women are up to in this week, because we do have the Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers, which are taking place this coming weekend. We've got 16 teams and 8 winners will be coming through to the November season ending finals in Seville. We've got a repeat of last year's tie between France and Great Britain. We were all in Coventry this time.
Yeah, it's not quite
Coventry,
is it?
Yeah.
I'm
on the northern coast.
Ah, okay.
Le Chaudron in France, apparently.
Yes.
Le Portel. Caroline Garcia is there, and obviously Katie Balter. So I expect they'll have their matchup. That could be a fun one. But yeah, Fran Jones is in the team for GB for the first time, and also Emma Raducanu is in the squad. So expect her to play, I assume.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be tight. We will have to say, who do you think is going to get it? Last time it was a battle of the tie breaks. Can one of our players take out Garcia on clay is the question I have.
I'm
going to
go France, though. I still think France.
I think
will
France.
Yeah.
You have to say
well.
GB, Joel. Come on.
I'm not going to be boring. Come on, GB. GB are going to win.
Yes.
Fran Jones is going to win it.
She's going to take out Caroline Garcia.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think it'll be tight, but I'm going to back GB on this one. Katie Balter has been... I know Garcia had a good run in Miami, but Katie Balter, arguably...
Clay.
Yeah. I'll go GB.
Keep the faith.
We love the optimism.
We've also got ties. We've got USA versus Belgium. So Pegula, Keys, Emma Navarro is going to be... they're all in action for USA against Belgium. I'm sure the Americans are going to come through that one there.
Yeah.
They're at home.
USA.
And quite dominant there. Australia, Mexico, Switzerland, Poland. Well, that could be quite fun. Switzerland, Poland. Japan v Kazakhstan, Brazil v Germany, Slovakia versus Slovenia. Oh, they haven't got far to travel, have they? And then Ukraine versus Romania, which is taking place in the USA, who will be staging the event for
Amelia
Ukraine.
Ireland. Did you see that? Where they used to be a tournament.
Oh, did there? Oh.
Yeah.
But it's actually Alina Svitolina's foundation staging the event, which is, very nice.
Let's hope Alina Svitolina gets picked for the team.
Well, surely she will. Simona Halep is included as well. So
she's actually had to withdraw from that one.
Oh, has she? Oh,
it just came out in Romanian press, but hadn't made it to the wider press yet.
Right.
Breaking news. I was informed by Alina. Yes, so she's not playing.
You've got everything covered.
But she is entering a 125 in Portugal next week. So that's what my Portuguese sources tell me.
Interesting. Okay. Ah, well, there we go. Thank you very much. So yeah, loads of BJK cup ties. That will never not be a mouthful to say. Blah. But that brings us to a close to our bumper episode. And we'll be back to round up all the ties and Monte Carlo this time next week.
Yes, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from the ATP and WTA tours as we enter into the clay swing.
We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. So if you like what you're hearing, then do make sure to leave us a rating and review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And if you'd like to see Casper Ruud take on a drone, then do follow us on social media. You can see all of the clips and the content that we shot when we were in Estoril. You can also email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X. And the handle for all of those is Tennis Weekly Pod. You can also purchase some of our lovely Tennis Weekly merch, which I was also modeling in Estoril, if you might have seen. And that's at etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email us for the mailbag at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com or do check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next week at Tennis Weekly HQ, so I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.